This episode of A Light is brought to you by Book 3 of the Generations Trilogy, Alone, which hit stores on March 7th, 2017. We don't know when or if we will podcast this book, so pre-order hardcovers or autographed copies from the links at scottsigler.com/alone. Get your pre-order in now so you won't have to wait one stinking minute for the over-the-top, blood-drenched finale of this series. That is scottsigler.com/alone. And now, on with our story. Welcome to the serial audiobook A Light, an unabridged podcast of Book 2 in the Generations Trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by Emma Galvin. This novel is available in print, ebook, or as a full-length audiobook. For links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Audible, please visit scottsigler.com/alight. Hello, junkies! How the hell are you? Guess what time it is in San Diego? It's Comic-Con time! And the People's Author is... I'm pre-recording this, actually, because this comes out on Sunday, and I've got a very, very busy Comic-Con ahead of me. Or it's behind me now when you're listening to this, because Sunday is the last day of this wonderful Super Bowl of geekdom, and I wanted to walk around and be able to enjoy it, you know, and buy plastic crap that I clearly do not need, because that's what being a geek is all about. And also maybe some t-shirts, and who knows? Fun things. So I am literally geeking out as you listen to this. There's only 4 episodes of A Light left, only 4, including this one. So this is a great time to get people involved in the show, see if you can get your friends to listen to it live, see if they want to catch up on Light. You guys can enjoy the finale together. The finale is, it's up there. It's pretty intense. It's super duper intense. There are body parts. That's all I'm going to say. It's my only teaser. There are actual body parts involved in this. There will be no talky talk after the show. Let me get you caught up on the story, and then you know what's going to happen. Oh, we're going to get into it. Yeah. The last episode was drenched in tragedy and blood. Several birthday children are dead, as are several Springers, all killed at the hands of Matilda and the grown-ups. O'Malley is missing and might be dead. Barca is badly hurt, but with Lafa's help may have escaped the battle. M was waiting to ambush Matilda when she was surprised by old Bishop and knocked unconscious. And now, episode 19 of A Light.
Part 5. Destiny and Doom. 39. I wake. My head pounds and throbs. Feels like it's full of jagged rocks, grinding against each other. I'm on my back. Lights above blind me. I blink madly. I try to raise a hand to block the lights, but I can't move. She's coming too. That voice, the hiss of a grown-up. A woman, but so familiar. I almost recognize it. Thank you, says a second voice, one that is unmistakable and full of the promise of death. Matilda. She has me. Panic bites deep. I struggle to push it back, to stay in control. I can see a little now. The lights above are embedded in a carved ceiling. I'm indoors. I try to sit up. But something cool, solid, and curved pins my wrists, my waist, my ankles. White fabric to my left, to my right. I'm in a coffin. I yank and twist and lurch. I've broken bars like these before, and I'm much stronger than I was then. I pull until the coffin shakes with my effort, until my bones feel like they are going to break. Something is different. These bars. They're smooth, not rough against my skin. They aren't rusted. They're new. My arms give out mid-pull, as if my muscles, bones, and skin realized escape is impossible before my brain does. I lie there, chest heaving, not knowing what comes next. A head leans in, silhouetted by the bright light. A grown-up, wrinkled, charcoal skin covered by a mask. Through that mask, I see one bulging red eye, and a white patch where the other eye used to be. Hello, pretty girl, Matilda says. I can't move. Death stares down at me. She turns, looks somewhere to her left. Lower the sides of the husk. I want to get a good look at her. A buzz, then a soft clacking sound. All four sides of the coffin slide down and away. On my left, Matilda, and just past her, a closed golden coffin. It's been polished until the carvings gleam with a lifelike vibrance. On my right, a waist-high, curved red metal wall with that strange symbol engraved on it in black. I'm in the observatory. Farther down on my right, two wrinkled grown-ups, wearing the same metal and mask array as Matilda, are standing on the pedestal platform. One is tall and thin. The other is the shortest I have seen yet. By height alone, I know it is the grown-up version of Gaston. I look past my bound feet, knowing what I will see. The big black X, shackles and crown dangling. Behind the X, the mural of an old man, a younger man driving a knife through his chest. Everything is clean. All the dust is gone. Where is O'Malley? Did he escape? I hope Barca and Lafa got away. Somewhere behind me, I hear a voice I know all too well. You have what you wanted, Aramovsky says. Now give me what I need. My body surges, thrums with sudden blind hope. Aramovsky, kill her! Get me out of here! I thrash at my restraints with newfound strength. He has to strike fast. How many circle stars did he bring with him? Wait. What did he say? Matilda continues to stare down at me. I hear footsteps. Then I see him. Aramovsky standing beside her, my spear in his hand. He is wearing red robes, just like those of the torturers, carved into the observatory walls. My body starts to shake. I struggle to breathe. Why is he standing with her? Why isn't he fighting her? Matilda reaches up a wrinkled old arm and rests her hand on Aramovsky's red-robed shoulder. You're lucky, boy, she says. You lured my shell away from the others, but she was almost killed by that disgusting vermin army. I can't believe what I'm hearing. Bello didn't just give Aramovsky the secret of the symbols so he could take over as leader. She told him where to send me. He gave me up to Matilda. We didn't know there were so many of them, he says. If you had grabbed her at the gate, like you were supposed to, she wouldn't have been at risk. He tilts his head toward me. Besides, she looks fine. Matilda adjusts her mask, as if the fit bothers her. She looks filthy. But we did run late. Sometimes old bodies do not react as quickly as one would like. At any rate, a deal is a deal. She looks off to her left. Bring them. I hear heavy footsteps approaching. I crane my head up to see. It's Coyotl, young and strong and smiling, carrying a large carved box. I feel heavier, like I'm sinking into this coffin, like I'm drowning in darkness. Coyotl has been overwritten, same as Bello, same as Beckett. Coyotl walks and talks and looks like my friend, the one who taught me how to sharpen the spear, but my friend is gone forever. He sets the box down on my thighs. See, Matilda, he says. I told you she was in good shape. A whining tone to his voice. He is desperate to please her, but Matilda is far from pleased. Your body has far less damage, Uriah, she says to him. Look at her. She hasn't fixed anything. Some of these scars are never going to come out. Coyotl shrugs. You might have to hose her down first. All that camouflage on her face. Somehow she fooled herself into thinking she's a knight. A knight? Is that what the circle stars are really called? The folly of youth, Matilda says. Such beauty, yet she doesn't care. I was like that once. I won't make that same mistake again. I'll treasure my youth. This time, I'll savor every last moment of it. Coyotl reaches into the box, pulls something out, holds it up for Aramovsky to see. It's a silver bracelet. The ceiling lights play off the white stone, gleam against the long metal point. 20 of them, Coyotl says. Aramovsky slowly reaches out a trembling hand, takes the bracelet. 20, he says. With these in our war machines, We'll slaughter the Springers. How do I use it? Matilda pulls Aromovsky closer to her. I see his lip curl slightly, involuntarily. Remember our deal, she says, her words syrupy sweet. When you attack, you will not use people on the list I gave you. Their creators are waiting. Those shells must not be risked. He hasn't attacked yet. There's still time. Aromovsky nods. I understand. And should I still send you Bishop Gaston and Borjigin? Yes, she says. And make sure you do it before the battle. We need to take out the strongest first. A few at a time, so there are no more accidents. Make sure they come alone, and through the entrance I showed you. We'll gas them there so they don't put up a struggle. These children are dangerous. Matilda looks down at me. You cut off Fiske's head with a shovel? Really, my dear, that's so... well, so savage. An insane cackle bubbles out from behind her mask. Aromovsky lifts the box off my thighs. He starts to turn away, then stops, turns back, leans close. Don't be afraid, he says. The gods want this for you. He means it. He believes every word. I spit in his face. He stands, shocked and angry, spit clinging to one closed eye. He wipes it away with the sleeve of his red robe. You've always thought you were smarter than me, he says. Not smarter, I say. Deadlier. Tell your gods I'll send you to meet them very soon. Coyote guides Aromovsky away, somewhere behind me. They must be walking to the racks with the empty plastic bins. Leave her be, Coyote says. I'll walk you out and show you how to use the bracelets. My brave words ring hollow. The reality of my situation pushes down on me. I have failed in every way. Barca's people outnumber mine 100 to 1, maybe more, but those bracelets will even the odds. Aromovsky is only going to use people that don't have a living grown-up ready to take over their body. Many of those that fight will die, sacrifices to the god of blood. Those that do not fight will be rounded up a few at a time, then their minds will be wiped. Their young bodies used as a vessel for ancient evil. Just as I will be used. Matilda delicately reaches for my face. I thrash my head away, lurch at my restraints. But there is no escape. When her hand comes close enough, I bite at it. She pauses, her fingertips just out of reach. Biting again. Matilda walks to the platform, grabs something there, brings it back. She's holding a thin red cane. She shows it to me. Remember when Grandpa used one of these on us, when we cursed? You know what he always said. Spare the rod, spoil the child. A flick of her wrist raises it. Another flick brings it down on my stomach. Agony engulfs me. My body convulses. My muscles tighten so suddenly and completely that wrists and ankles and hips smash against the bars holding them down. I burn. I'm burning up. I'm going to die. I don't want to die. She lifts the rod and the pain stops. My breath comes rushing back. I taste blood. Silly girl, Matilda says. You bit through your lip. I suppose that serves you right, but don't damage yourself any further. The withered hand reaches for my face. I don't want that pain again, so I close my eyes and stay still. Rough, dry fingers on my forehead, sliding across my skin. Look what you've done to my pretty hair, she says. I can't wait to feel a brush slide through it once again. It's been so long. This dead thing is petting me. I'm terrified and disgusted. I'm hateful and alone. She makes a tisk-tisk sound. I feel her pull something out of my hair. I force myself to open my eyes and look at my killer. If I am to die, I will die facing my enemy. She's holding a bit of twig. As soon as the transfer is done, I'm going to take a long bath, she says. I'm going to clean up this filth you've caked on yourself. This is no way for an empress to look. Brewer said he was on our side, I said. Why did he lie about the shuttle being the only way down here? He didn't lie. There used to be 5 shuttles. During the rebellion, Brewer's people destroyed all but one. Then he locked us out of the hangar. When you made me take you to the hangar, I didn't think it would be open, but Brewer unlocked it for you. That was the first time I'd laid eyes on a shuttle in 2 centuries. Then what about Bello's ship? We built it, Matilda says. We thought we might need a way down to Omeokan someday, and 200 years is a lot of time to make contingency plans. Brewer ruined the shuttle fleet, but there is so much of this Olodal he doesn't control, where he can't see what's happening. The ship we made isn't as elegant as the one you stole, but it was good enough to get 13 of us safely down to the surface. Well, you dealt with Bello, the rest of us came here and prepared. I look her up and down, take in her old, ruined body. How could she have reached the top of the observatory in order to get down here? She keeps petting me. I have to clench my teeth together to resist biting her again. I'm sure you're wondering about all those steps, she says. Sometimes it's hard to remember how unimaginative I was at your age. There are other entrances to this place, pretty girl. Do you think I wanted to spend my next life trudging up and down 3,000 steps? If you and your bishop had walked around the temple and looked carefully, you would have found a normal entrance that leads right to this very spot. No symbol required, no steps involved. She called it a temple, just like Aramovsky did. My head hurts so bad. It feels like my brain has been crushed and smashed, and this sense of failure is making it worse. Coyote and Beckett were overwritten, I say. Is Mueller still alive? You sending those three out was a wonderful break for us, and with a functioning pentapod, no less. Little Victor Mueller is locked up in an observatory prison cell, where he'll stay until we retake the shuttle. We will take the shuttle up to the Zolotl instead of the awful ship we came down in. Aramovsky said you didn't take any joyrides, fortunately, so there should be enough fuel for the return trip. The taller of the two grown-ups on the pedestal platform calls out,
We are ready.
That's the woman. Her voice, so old yet so familiar. Please don't let it be her. Please don't let it be her. Is that Spingate? Matilda laughs. Spingate was on Brewer's side. I had Bishop cave in her skull with one of those silly tools she liked so much. Don't worry, pretty girl. Aramovsky will make sure your Spingate is armed and in the first wave he sends against the vermin. No! You can't make her fight! She's pregnant! Amazing, Matilda says. You hormone-engorged little brats didn't waste any time, did you? Running around like animals. How about you, Em? She spits my name like it's a curse word. Were you a sinful slut like Teresa? Did you steal my virginity from me? I didn't do anything. I don't know about anyone else. Just Spingate and Gaston. What? The word is a shout, commanding, insistent, that comes from the pedestal platform. The little grown-up steps onto the floor and walks toward us. He stops next to Matilda. Captain, she says. I'm surprised to hear respect in her voice. Does this tiny man intimidate her? He stares down at me through his mask, 2 red eyes thrumming with excitement and intensity. The Spingate shell is pregnant with my child. I don't know what to say. Will they want to kill her and the baby, or will the truth keep her off the battlefield? This creature is 1,000 years old, but there has to be some bit of the Gaston I know still in there. I nod. He turns to Matilda. I will tell Aramovsky to bring her to me. Without waiting for an answer, he walks off into the shadows. One-eyed Matilda seems rattled. She gestures to the platform, to the lone grown-up standing there. Obviously, that is not Teresa's Spingate, Matilda says. But I'm sure you know this one, Shell. May I present the lovely and talented Dr. Kenzie Smith? The grown-up on the platform bows stiffly. She starts to stand, then freezes, a gnarled hand going to her back. Oh, she says. Damn it. That hurts. She slowly straightens, holds onto a pedestal for balance. Let's get this started. I need to sit down soon. Matilda rubs her nasty hands together. The skin is so rough I can hear it. Finally, we're ready, she says. Not you, Matilda, Smith says. I'm afraid Bishop hit your shell on the head a little too hard. There could be a concussion. We have to wait so that I can make sure there isn't any damage I need to fix first. Matilda's one eye swirls madly. She's furious. She glares at someone in the corner. I crane my head up to see. The hulking form of old Bishop. He's been standing there the entire time, silent, unmoving. You stupid oaf, she says to him. I told you to be careful. I hear concern in her hiss of a voice, perhaps even fear. Brewer said the longer we were alive, forming our own memories and connections, the less chance the process had of working. But it worked on Bello, Coyotl, and Beckett, so it will likely work on me, unless my grinding headache causes problems somehow. I've waited so long, Matilda says. A few hours more won't matter. She gives my hair a final pat. Since you've been so difficult, my dear, let's watch something together while we wait. Kenzie, open it. The golden coffin to my left makes the same sound mine made. The sides lower. My heart shatters. I want to wake up. I want all of this to be a horrible dream. It's O'Malley. He's lying on white linen, held down by the same kind of bars that hold me. He's blinking, just coming awake. O'Malley, it's Em. Look at me. He turns his head, terror wrinkling his face. He sees me, recognizes me, then starts looking everywhere. Up, left, right, down toward his feet. He cranes his head back, trying to see behind him. Em, are we in the observatory? On the platform, one of the pedestals starts to glow. Pre-imprinting preparations complete, Smith says. We're ready. Bring in Kevin. I'm confused for a moment. Kevin O'Malley is right next to me. Then with a chest-ripping blast of horror, I understand. And so does he. No, he says. Don't do this! Past our feet, I see Coyotl helping a masked grown-up walk toward the black X. A grown-up so old and withered, he can barely move. Is it time? The old one says. Is it finally my time? The voice sounds ancient, like it's made of dust and worm-eaten wood. And yet I recognize it instantly. It is the voice of Kevin O'Malley. In the coffin next to me, my friend starts to scream. 40. Behind the clear mask, old O'Malley's red eyes appear cloudy, unfocused. Matilda pets my hair. Just watch, little one, she says. Your turn is coming soon. I shake my head over and over. Please, don't kill him. O'Malley pulls at his restraints. His eyes blaze with animal panic. He grunts desperately, throws himself left and right. Matilda is standing between my coffin and his. She turns, raises the red cane, snaps it down on his stomach. His back arches so suddenly and severely, I wonder if his spine might snap. His throat grinds out a guh-guh-guh-guh sound that makes me scream in helpless rage. She lifts the rod. You will not hurt your body. Not now, she says to him. Struggle again. You get the rod again. Coyotl mostly drags old O'Malley to the black X. Old Bishop comes over to help. Together, they raise the shriveled grown-up's arms, lock the shackles around his wrists, then restrain his ankles. Bishop removes old O'Malley's mask. Those disgusting folds of wet flesh, they either cover the grown-up's mouth, or they are the mouth. Sickening to look at. Coyotl slides the black crown onto the withered creature's head. Roomy, red eyes stare out with a combination of confusion and excitement. The old monster starts to cough. Hard to breathe. I need my mask. Coyotl gives him a hard pat on the cheek. Don't worry, Kev. In a few minutes, the mask won't matter. The old one's red eyes seem to go clear for a moment. He stares at my O'Malley. By the gods, the old thing says. It's me. The young and the ancient lock eyes. A low growl starts in my O'Malley's throat, builds to a scream as he starts to thrash against his restraints. Matilda lowers the rod. My O'Malley again goes rigid. He shudders and bucks, tries to beg her to stop, but his mouth won't form words.
You horrible bitch, I roar. Stop it or I'll kill you.
Matilda turns to me, smacks the rod down on my thigh. The charge sets my body ablaze. I try not to scream. I fail. She lifts the rod.
No cursing, she says. Children should know the rules.
Old O'Malley is half giggling, half coughing.
My shell is so strong, he says. So much vigor.
Everything grows blurry as tears fill my eyes.
Please, Matilda.
I'll beg. I'll plead. I'll sacrifice myself, whatever it takes.
Let him go, and I swear I'll let you do it to me.
My O'Malley's head turns fast to face me, his features contorted with both fear and anger.
Em, no, don't promise them anything.
Even now, with blood on his lips from where he bit through them, his cheeks streaked with tears, he is beautiful. How could I not have told this boy that I loved him? I am desperate for him to live, even if that means my own death. I tear my eyes away from him, force myself to look at her.
Matilda, please.
My voice is weak, subservient.
I swear, I'll do whatever you want. I won't fight.
She pats my head, makes that tisk-tisk sound with her unseen mouth. Oh, my dear, you can fight all you like. It won't make any difference.
Preparations complete, Old Smith calls out. Ometiodol?
Ready for instructions, doctor, the room answers.
Perform transference power-up and pre-flight checks.
The entire room hums, a long droning sound that makes my hair stand on end. Coyote walks over to my O'Malley. The overwritten circle star leans close, the expression of gleeful hate, something I would have never thought could exist on his face.
This is going to hurt, Coyote says.
His words ring with a sick joy.
So much.
My O'Malley can't fight anymore. He has nothing left. All he can do is cry.
Em, please, he says in a whisper. Help me.
Sobs rack my body. I can't do anything. I am powerless. Leader, empress, monster, friend, enemy. When it matters most, I am none of those things. I am nothing. I am just a circle. I am empty. Old O'Malley coughs, harder than before, struggles to draw breath.
I hope my old self hasn't changed too much, he says. I was never a crybaby like that.
Matilda laughs. It sounds like my laugh.
Kevin, you've been a lying, manipulating, backstabbing crybaby for 1,000 years, she says. Some things don't change.
The room darkens. Old Smith raises her arms, and they are bathed in color. The same lights that made Spingate glow like an angel soak into Old Smith's cratered skin, make her look like a moving statue that has disintegrated and blackened with age.
Ometiodol, commence final bioscan of receptacle.
Scanning, Dr. Smith.
The humming increases, almost drowns out my O'Malley's sobs and old O'Malley's cough. What little rage that still burns inside me is extinguished by a wave of hopelessness. My friend is going to die. He's an arm's length away. If only I could reach out to him. Right here, right now, Kevin O'Malley will cease to exist. And I can't stop it.
Bioscan complete, Dr. Smith, the room says. 0 risk factors. Ready to commence upon your order.
Old Smith lowers her glowing hands.
Commence transference.
The humming grows louder, fills the room, bounces off the ceiling and walls.
My O'Malley thrashes, but not of his own will. His body is reacting. Twitching and trembling, quivering and lurching.
They're killing him. The hum goes on forever. It fills my head, rattles my ears and teeth. It blocks out everything.
I want my hands loose, not so I can escape, but so I can drive my fingers into my ears, try to block that sound of death. And then the volume lowers, lowers, lowers. The humming stops. I look at my friend. He's on his back, staring straight up at the ceiling. His chest heaves. He blinks rapidly, shakes his head. He wiggles his nose, curls his lips, clicks his teeth, as if he's trying out his face for the first time. Please, please, please let it have failed. O'Malley's head turns toward me. He smiles. But it isn't his smile. Hello, young lady. In that instant, I know my friend is no more. I'm numb. I feel nothing. I am as cold as a corpse. The monsters have won, and I'm next. Matilda walks to his coffin. She presses a small green jewel set just behind his head. O'Malley's restraints clack open. He sits up, stretches out his arms, rubs his legs, looks at his fingers like they are made of magic and wind. His eyes shine with wonder and awe. I can't believe it, he says. I feel no pain. I knew my old body hurt, but until this very moment, I hadn't realized I spent every minute of every day in pain, and now, nothing. It's gone. He swings his legs over the side, lets his feet dangle. The tears in my eyes make him shimmer and wave. Matilda puts a hand on his shoulder. Slowly, at first, she says. Your body is fine, but your mind must get used to moving it again. O'Malley brushes the hand aside, all but pushes Matilda out of the way. He slides off his coffin table and stands. Praise be, this new person says. Praise be to all the gods. It worked. A desperate, haunting moan of anguish makes my hair stand on end. At the X, the gnarled, restrained, grown-up O'Malley lifts his head. His frail lungs try to draw in air, air that is killing him. He looks around the room, disoriented. It didn't work, he says. We must try again. I'm still trapped in this hideous body. Oh, I hurt so bad, even worse than before. I don't understand. It did work. I can see the young O'Malley, and I know he is not mine. Young O'Malley starts to laugh. Old O'Malley's head snaps up. For the first time, the red eyes clear all the way, blink rapidly. No, he says, this can't be. Young O'Malley walks closer to his old self, does a little stumbling dance. Come on now, Chancellor. You knew this would happen. The wrinkled monster looks around the room madly. I realize that he is looking for someone to help him. Wait, he says. I didn't think it would be like this. Young O'Malley reaches toward Bishop, palm up. The hulking monster hands over a sheathed knife. O'Malley takes it by the hilt, then grips the sheath and pulls the blade free. The knife, ornate, golden, bejeweled, looks exactly like the knife in the painting behind the X, the one with the young man driving the blade into the old man's chest. Young O'Malley smiles wide, points the tip at his former self. If it makes you feel better, old man, this is exactly how I thought it would turn out, which means it's exactly how you thought it would turn out, too. My, how interesting to talk to oneself. The old monster pulls at the restraints, but he was weak even before this ordeal began. Please, he says. I'm not ready. It's not fair. I want to live. Why did I spend 1,000 years in agony if I don't get to live? So much pain in that voice. So much betrayal. I almost feel sorry for him. The overwrite. It doesn't move the consciousness of the old person. It copies it, leaving two versions. The old version remains trapped in its fragile, failing body. Young O'Malley flips the knife in the air, catches it by the hilt. He walks closer to the axe. Don't be sad, old me. You got to live for 1,000 years. I'll get to live for 1,000 more. From behind the fleshy folds, hiding its mouth, the old monster screams nonsensical words,
babbles and begs, but it does no good. Young O'Malley places the point of the knife on his old self's chest, then leans in. The gnarled skin punctures. Red-gray blood leaks down. There is a moment of hesitation, then a crack as the knife punches through bone and sinks deep. The old monster twitches.
No,
it says in a faint hiss.
I was supposed to live forever.
The head droops. The old man moves no more. Young O'Malley, now the only O'Malley, pulls the knife free. He wipes the flat of the blade against his dead former self, scraping free the red-gray blood. He slips the knife back into the sheath, then slides the sheath into the belt of his black coveralls. The lump in my throat changes, becomes a fist. I turn my head to the side just before I vomit bits of spicy meat all over my coffin's white linen and onto the stone floor. Kenzie, she vomited, Matilda says. Is her brain all right? Does she have a concussion? Old Smith shuffles off the pedestal platform. Her gnarled fingers grip my face, turn my head left, then right. Hard to tell, she says to Matilda. To me, she says, how is your head? It hurts, I say, so bad. Matilda huffs. Like she's going to tell the truth, Kenzie. Don't be gullible. So your former self can lie, Smith says. Well, isn't that a surprise? Get her ready. Matilda's voice rings with eagerness. I'm done waiting. We're going to do it now, concussion or not. The deceased, rotten stink of Smith's fingers combines with the acrid smell of my vomit. My stomach threatens another round. There's no food left to throw up, but my body doesn't care. Wait a little longer, Smith says. Matilda, you only get one chance at this, and Bishop did knock her unconscious. Smith releases me. I can still smell her fingers. Matilda glares at Bishop. Thank you so much for that, lover. Lover? The old me and the old Bishop. Lovers? You wanted her here, he says, and here she is. It's the first time I've heard the huge old monster speak. The sound tears at my heart. It is his voice. The voice of the boy who kissed me at the waterfall. The voice of the boy who, when all was lost and I was sent off on my own to die, whispered to me that he would send help. It is his voice, matter of fact and to the point. But it is also not. It is breathier, shorter. It is tired. Matilda huffs in disgust. Maybe you did it on purpose. Maybe you tried to hurt her so I couldn't transition. Bishop says nothing. Matilda sighs. Fine, we will wait. The old creature looks down at me. The mask hides the fleshy folds that in turn hid her mouth. But I know she is smiling. I can tell by her one remaining red eye. Soon, my pet. Soon, we will be one.
You have been listening to A Light, Book 2 in the Generations Trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler, performed by Emma Galvin. Produced by Adrian Galvin and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Follow Scott on Twitter and Instagram, where his handle is at Scott Sigler, ScottSigler, one word, or join our Facebook group at facebook.com/ScottSigler. Theme music is the song Unseen Horrors by Kevin MacLeod.